comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable, though it was wise advice that was given to me before I wrote this. There are members here who are going through crisis. They are grieving, dealing with a personal issue, seeking solace and comfort from the storm of reality that is outside. So the question is, can I give you comfort? No, I'm not a minister, not even close. When I was asked to speak, I consulted multiple UUs, and I got a lot of support saying, oh, they should hear your voice. I think it's great for you to talk to them. These were UUs who had known me. But I was seeking one particular UU out, a friend of mine who had known me from Harrisburg. And he said, well, Reverend Kent has known you a while, so they know what they're in for. So be yourself, God help them. I can give those of you who are going, who have no interest in listening to a call of action or a lecture, this much. Since 2002, I've lost both my older sisters. My parents have been divorced, have been pushed out of a job. And every time while my friends have been there to comfort me, there's been one person, a woman I met when I was in Arizona in the 1980s in college. She was from a small town in Arizona, didn't even have a stoplight. And she was with me even when she was told, I was the only one of two African Americans in the journalism department at ASU, and she was told by her advisors that she would get better grades if she hung around with a better type of fella. And she should have done the smart thing, which would have been the thing of manners and etiquette, and just said, oh, thank you, I'll listen to that, and then ignore him. But I later found this out from someone else. She said, Chuck Bowser's the reason why I'm going to graduate from this place. I'm not going to abandon him as a friend. Every time I had a loss, unlike my other friends who would give me words of consolation and comfort, she would give me problems to solve, issues that she was dealing with, because she knew that in helping her, I reaffirmed myself and life, because it gave me purpose to work out of the grief I was going through. So I offer that my words may not heal you or help you move on, but they can give you something to either work for or work against. And help with the great work in either way that you must do. I am so proud of this church and this congregation. I've seen Christmases where the pews have looked like something from a 1980s Benetton ad. There has one time a heteronormative, I gotta get this right, heteronormative, monoethnic family entered and they stood out. We are a congregation who personally gets that love is a diverse and wonderful thing, and I am very proud of that. I'm a member of a congregation that does that. On MLK days, I've been in here in the overflow area, and it has been bigger. It's actually been bigger than the current attendance now, filled with people who are waiting to be called on to go do something. I'm just so proud that there are that many people who show up like that. Ours is a congregation that gets the importance of activism. In fact, I'm not here, despite the title, to bring condemnation to this congregation concerning race. But I want to bring you an idea that you can carry forward in the battles I know you do as such a wonderful, loving congregation. When I began working in 1199C, it was around 2000. My father was well-known politically in the area. He was well-known in the union. But that being well-known did not trickle down to help me when I was working as an organizer. It was a mostly African-American union, and in the mindset of them, I wasn't black enough. I didn't sound black. I didn't speak black. I ate sushi. I wasn't involved in the political things that most African Americans were involved in. I was involved with NARAL, which was not considered a black thing. And the way the union was set up, this did not make life easy for me as an organizer. There are things you have to get done by staff. You have to have boxes made for votes and ballots made. And I also had a political director who was the right-hand person of the president, who looked upon me as a political threat. So she was telling them to slow down their work. So the last thing I needed to do was stick out. You know, I also had a law degree. These were mostly people who didn't have college degrees. And who was I to come forward as an organizer? So I needed to get along to get stuff done. Then came the Million Man March. And everyone was excited. Our union was chartering buses to go down. I was asked by my coworkers, finally, about being a part of this and going down. Everyone was making plans. I didn't go. The Louis Farrakhan was racist. He was an anti-Semite. I considered him a bigot. I considered him anti-LGBTQ. I didn't consider him very feminist. And I could not go and support him. I thought of the 1930s when when Hitler first was someone who was telling every German how it was okay to be proud to be German, make Germany great again. I'll go on. And this was before David Duke endorsed him as having the right idea on race. And I made it clear I was not going. I spoke up, though the wise thing, the thing that would have been proper etiquette, proper manners, and kept me out of trouble, would have just said, oh, I can't make it. But I have been raised that the courage of your convictions was more important than anything else, and you had to speak up. Now, please understand, there was no one Jewish in our union at the time, and there was certainly no one who was out as LGBTQ. I was not standing up for some friend of mine when I made a point of saying this. And I reaped what I sowed. I mean, my shop stewards came up to me and told me that they had been told about this, so I had to quiet those issues because a lot of them were angry. I did not go. The administrative staff stopped doing my work, so I had to do my administrative work and do my organizing work. And of course, when I went to my supervisor, for those who don't know a union, you're told, well, you need to get along with people. I'm not going to make them do their work. So I ended up doing a lot, and I was a new father, I wasn't a single parent yet. I was a new dad with kids, and this job was important to me, and all these issues was not something you want your union president, Henry Nicholas, to know about. he does not have patience with you having excuses why the work doesn't get done. But I was successful, and I went on to work in Harrisburg, and then I came back. The union needed my help. They recruited me to help with contracts. And then the 10th anniversary of the Million Man March came along. Now, I already knew what was going to happen if I spoke out. It had happened to me before, 8 years before. All I had to do was be quiet. I couldn't do that. I couldn't do that because just as before, it was important to speak out against racism and not to openly support it, even through my silence. And I had problems again at work. Racism no matter its type, is an evil that is permissive, lethal, and destructive. Yet, too often, people, when a friend expresses a racist statement, acts racist, their friends use manners as the reason not to publicly denounce that behavior. They don't want to insult their friend in public. They say they'll talk to them later. When we do that, when we let our silence, when we let racism speak into the space and then silently do not public denounce, we offend and insult that victim a second time. Or when those, not in this congregation, hide behind our first principle and say, well, do the inherent worth, though, so I'm not going to denounce this person. There's no excuse for not calling bigotry what it is in 2018. There just isn't. Somehow we can see that silence equals death if it is misogyny, homophobia, smoking, but not racism. No matter how many unarmed black men die, no matter that I must worry about my children's lives, no matter that my life hangs over whether or not a cop who pulls me over is having a bad day. Our faith gave the world Viola Liuzzo, a civil rights martyr, one of the few white women who were killed in the civil rights struggle. She was a UU from Michigan, I believe, and she was a member of the NAACP up there. This is back during the Selma marches, when it's not considered, that wasn't considered the thing to do. That wasn't considered etiquette or manners for a nice white woman to be doing that. And when she saw what was happening in Selma, she came down to Selma and she gave comfort and aid and participated. And she was assassinated by the KKK. It is believed, if you watch the documentary about her life, Home of the Brave, that her assassination is what led to the Voting Rights Act. Just so you know, Martin Luther King gave her eulogy. That means that there is a red line from her red barrage of courage of her beating heart through the Voting Rights Act to the election of the first African-American president. Because without the Voting Rights Act, we would not have gotten Barack Obama, and without Viola, we may not have gotten the Voting Rights Act. So when people ask you, just what has Unitarian Universalism done, I hope you will let them know, we got you, Barack Obama. We got you saving from this, from the recession we were going to have. There is also, on top of the red line, there is a yellow line. A yellow line of cowardice that runs from those that put manners before humanity is a line that underscores apathy and collusion by silence, is a line that endorses bigotry. It supports a culture of racism by not opposing it immediately because it lets racism seem okay if you keep it to yourself. It does not publicly denounce, and in the darkness of that apathy, like filth, it festers and is toxic. It allows the purveyors of racism to gain followers, such as David Duke and Louis Farrakhan. It is a line that kills. It kills people, like Viola in the Gentile South, like MOVE members, kids who were not allowed to get out of a burning building, like Heather Heyer in the Gentile South, like Trayvon Martin, like me at the hand of a cop who is having a bad day. And as long as we let that line of cowardice run, we will not change the culture. I opened with how I love this congregation. I do not charge you to change. My faith and love in this congregation is strong. I know you will step up and put truth before manners. I know you will break the yellow line and change the culture. So with these words, I only hope that I have given you another tool to help you with what you will already do. And I know you will do it because I love and believe in the sincerity of this faith. I love and believe in the sincerity of this church. And I love and believe in the sincerity of this Benetton overflowing MLK congregation. Thank you.